Welcome to Busy Research, the podcast where business meets data and insights drive success. I'm your host, Vicki McCarthy, Director of the Center for Applied Business Research at Austin Peay State University. On this podcast, we get busy learning about how applied business research can improve business decision-making. Welcome to another episode of Busy Research. Today, we discuss how consumers evaluate information to make purchasing decisions. And joining us is Dr. Maria Cronley, Provost and Senior Vice President for Academic Affairs at Austin Peay State University in Clarksville, Tennessee. Dr. Cronley earned her PhD in marketing from the University of Cincinnati. In addition to a decade working in corporate marketing, Dr. Cronley worked as a professor and scholar for over 15 years and is a nationally recognized consumer behavior expert. During her academic career, Dr. Cronley has published more than 30 articles in journals and books, co-authored a textbook, and has received numerous grants, awards, and nominations related to her scholarship and teaching. Welcome, Provost Cronley.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to have a discussion with you today.
Well, and to start off, I would like to congratulate you on the newest edition of your book, Consumer Behavior.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, we're very excited about it. It's available for purchase now and for professors to adopt for their classes. So we're really excited about it. So we really tried to add a lot more content around social media marketing and digital marketing to this edition. So we hope that people who are using it like it.
Great. Well, to kick things off in this discussion, could you provide a brief overview of this research for our audience?
Absolutely. So my research interests really center on consumer judgment and decision-making. So I really try to focus on some core concepts that we have in consumer behavior. Also, I use the term consumer psychology interchangeably because I do consider myself a consumer psychologist. So those areas are what we call selective information processing. That's really how consumers consider pieces of information, how they actually process that information when they're making decisions. Consumer inferences and cognitive shortcuts. And I hope we can talk about more examples of that because they're so prevalent in marketing. And then obviously how all of those things influence persuasion. So I try to kind of take the core areas of these core areas of consumer psychology and apply them across a variety of marketing contexts. That might be someone buying a product or someone contributing to a charity or someone talking to their doctor about a prescription medication they saw on television.
So what motivated you to explore how consumers consider information related to the purchasing decisions?
Well, that really came out of my prior life in academics. So as an undergrad, I studied marketing. I was a marketing major. And then, as you mentioned in your intro, I worked for several years in the marketing industry. And so I worked for a bank and I worked for a consumer packaged goods company and I did consulting. And all of those things were around marketing research, developing marketing communication campaigns, and doing marketing strategy. And so it really grew the interest in understanding how consumers make judgments and make decisions really grew out of that professional life. So after working for years in that area, I was just so curious. And so when I decided to go back for my PhD in marketing, it became a really easy bridge and to declare and find those areas of research. Because I was just so curious how the things I was doing in my job affected how people were making decisions, either purchase decisions or banking decisions. And so it was really came out of my professional life that drew me into those academic questions.
What are some major drivers or factors that influence consumers who and use product judgment to make their purchasing choices?
Oh, that's a great question, but it's also a complicated question that could lead to a really long discussion. So I will try to keep it brief and just sort of divide it into two broad categories. And these probably won't be surprising. Essentially, there are drivers that are internal to us. Right? Things like motivation. How important is this decision to you? Are you buying a candy bar or are you buying an engagement ring? Right? What is your motivation for buying something? So that's an internal driver. Something like the emotions you might be feeling at the time of purchase or when you're considering the information. So how do you feel? And then finally, how much expertise you have. So do I know a lot about this product category? Is it something I've purchased before? Am I a complete novice? So how much expertise or experience do I have with the product? So there's other internal drivers too, but those are just some examples of things that are inside of us, right? Or internal to us that could be influencing. One thing I didn't mention there is personality. So there's a bunch of personality factors, believe it or not, that come out of psychology that also can influence how we make purchase and consumer decisions. On the flip side of that, external factors, of course, come into play. That wouldn't be surprising either. Things like how many choices are there in a product category, right? What's the time constraint? Do I have to make a decision fast or do I have lots of time? What might other people think about the purchase, right? How might my friends or my family look at me differently based on the decisions I'm making? And then most importantly, when and how the options are presented to the customer. So timing of information, presentation of information, when the consumer encounters it makes tons of impact. I hope I made that clear.
Yes, yes. And I can see when you mentioned before that you considered yourself a psychologist of consumer behavior in marketing, that makes sense when you talk about personality for purchasing decisions. Mm-hmm. But really, why should we care about how consumers consider and process information?
Good question. So, I mean, obviously, you can't live in the world without being a consumer. We make purchase decisions every day throughout our lives, right? And those internal factors and those external factors will impact in some way every purchase, every consumer judgment you make, and every purchase decision you make, and all of your consumer behaviors. So for example, why do you buy one kind of car over another? So that might be a consumer goods decision. But why would you decide to be a subscriber to Facebook versus not subscribe to Instagram, right? So that's also a purchase decision. So we make those kinds of purchase decisions throughout our lives, often without even thinking about it. We do things even unconsciously. It also affects what we consider consumer behaviors that people might not think of when you're thinking about consumer behavior. Things like giving to a charity. That's actually a consumer behavior. What about voting? Voting is definitely a consumer behavior. So it goes beyond just sort of how we purchase, use, and consume products in our lives or services, but also goes to other kinds of behaviors that we exhibit while living our life. So I think, of course, we need to care about that, because I think marketers really need to understand these processes to make their marketing efforts more effective and efficient, and also to help consumers make decisions.
And you mentioned earlier inferences and cognitive shortcuts. Can you tell us what these terms are and also why they're important?
Sure. So this is inferences and cognitive shortcuts are a big part of my academic research. So because they're so pervasive in how consumers process information. So first of all, an inference is by definition is a judgment that someone makes based on limited information. So think about a leap in logic, right? So we have to make decisions all of the time in our life, and not just consumer decisions, but lots of decisions all of the time by making inferences. So for example, right, you may see storm clouds in the sky while you're driving down the highway, and you think, oh wow, I might be driving into a rainstorm. Well, you're making an inference there. You're saying, oh, I think I'm going to be driving into a rainstorm based on a piece of evidence that you're seeing, but you don't have all the information, right? You don't have a full forecast to look at. You can't pull up the weather app on your phone while you're driving. So that's an inference. So because we make inferences every day about a variety of decisions, that's why they're really important. We make a lot of consumer decisions by making inferences. And I can give you a couple examples if you like. Cognitive shortcuts are also called cognitive heuristics. And these are simple rules that people apply, or they're cognitive shortcuts that people apply to make decisions quickly. They're important because, on the one hand, you might say, well, we're just lazy in our decision making, right? If we were being thoughtful and being careful, we would really look at the way we consider alternatives and make a thoughtful decision about all of our consumer choices. But we know the real world doesn't work that way. We make so many decisions that it's really good to often have heuristics or cognitive shortcuts. They simplify decision making. They make them faster. They make us more efficient and effective. Yes, do we lose accuracy? Do we lose maybe getting the perfect choice? Yes, but they really help us make decisions faster.
Well, and what are some real world practical examples of these in consumer behavior?
Sure, absolutely. So one really popular one that I've studied quite a bit, one inference. So let's talk about inferences first. There's a lot of these, but one that I have studied is, and maybe I'll give you two. One is what's called the correspondence bias. And this is applied in psychology and in consumer behavior across the spectrum. So the correspondence bias says, for example, that you see attributes about a person and you infer other attributes about them must also be true. So, for example, you've probably heard when we see someone who's very attractive, people also say, wow, this person's really attractive. I bet they're really nice. That's an inference. That's actually the correspondence bias. You're attributing something to them that may not be true based on another factor. I've applied this in my own research looking at celebrity advertising. So, we see a celebrity who is wearing a piece of jewelry, or she's driving a certain car, or she's even clearly endorsing a product on a commercial. And we often assume that that celebrity actually likes the product and uses the product. That's a good assumption. And that actually makes us, and if we like that celebrity, then we're more likely to like that product. The reality is, though, is the skeptical side of us knows deep down that a celebrity might be endorsing a product simply for the money. Right? Simply to be given a free car or simply be allowed to wear that jewelry to a awards ceremony. But they don't actually necessarily care about the product at all. We know that at a very rational level, but we still make that correspondence bias. We see that celebrity using a product or endorsing a product, and we assume that they like the product. And if we like them, then that's going to make us have a more favorable attitude toward the product. Another one is, and these get complicated really fast, but one of the areas I really study a lot is called selective information processing. And that is, it's a type of inference where economists for years have told us that the way to make a good decision is to lay all the choices out in front of you, right? And then weigh the pros and cons of each option. In reality, consumers rarely make decisions that way. They engage in what's called selective information processing. And so they will consider the first, let's say they're trying to choose a new laundry detergent and they walk into the laundry detergent aisle. They're going to pick up the first thing that they see, which is probably going to be at eye level, by the way. And they're going to maybe look at this product and see that it has all these different attributes and it's a good price. They're just going to put it into their shopping cart. Instead of looking at all of the products that are available, weighing the pros and cons of each, they look at the first option that's available and say, hey, does this meet my minimum standards? Does this meet the criteria that I think I'll be satisfied? Yes, I'll buy that. It makes for fast decision making. Maybe it's the best choice, maybe it's not. So those are inferences. Heuristics are related to this, but heuristics are more like quick rules of thumb that we use when we're making decisions. Probably one of the most famous ones is the price quality heuristic. Have you ever heard the adage, you get what you pay for? That's the price quality heuristic at work. So oftentimes when we look at products, we don't know how to infer their quality. And so we will sometimes use price to help us drive our judgment of quality. So Vicki, let me ask you a question. When you're going to have a fancy dinner party and you go to the grocery store and you really want to impress your guests and you want to buy a bottle of wine, how do you choose?
I see. So if it's guests, I buy more expensive wine, right?
That's right. Because you're inferring, you're making a cognitive, you're using a rule of thumb that tells you that, hey, when it comes to wine, the more expensive the wine, the better it is. And over 90% of consumers use the price quality heuristic when they're judging the category of wine. Over 90% of consumers use price to judge the quality of wine. In reality, the true correlation between quality of wine and the price is about 27%. So in reality, we really probably shouldn't be using the price of wine. We should be using other objective measures of quality, but we don't have access to that information. When you go to the store, you don't have the wine enthusiast ranking list in front of you, right? That has used objective measures to judge wine. You don't have a sommelier with you to help you make a decision. So price quality heuristic is something that marketers use quite a bit to help people make decisions, and they're trying to signal quality. Now, some products do have a really high correlation between price and quality. So for example, my research shows that in the category of house paint, price and quality are really closely correlated. So it's okay to use that heuristic. So next time you have to paint your house, go ahead and buy expensive paint. But that's one of the most common price heuristics that we have, and most people really understand it. Another is something called the scarcity heuristic. So when you see a product that is scarce, we tend to use a rule of judgment that scarce products are more valuable, right? Think about diamonds, right? The marketing machine out there, the diamond producers, have worked very hard to convince consumers that diamonds are rare, they're hard to get, and you can't find them everywhere. And because of that, they can charge a higher price because we believe that scarce products are more valuable. You can always see this in the retail setting, right? We see this applied a lot, right? Only two left, right? Buy today, limited supplies, going out of business sale, right? Things, you know, this offer will end in 10 minutes, right? So those things are all applying the scarcity heuristic. So those are just a couple examples.
And those are great examples. I have just learned a lot today and will rethink my my purchasing of wine for guests probably. And also absolutely. Paint, right? So, that's great. So, and you've touched on this in giving those examples, but when marketers are considering these two, the scarcity and price quality. So how can marketers apply these concepts?
Right. So marketers understand these heuristics too, and these inferences that consumers make. And so they can utilize those and leverage them in, for example, in their advertising or in their product placement on a retail shelf. There's 100 ways that consumers in context can use these. So going back to, remember my example about selective information processing, and I said, hey, that person's going to choose the first new detergent that they see on the shelf, and they're going to read the label, and that might be at eye level. Well, guess what? We often will naturally go to the eye level when we look at products in the retail environment. It's just the nature of how we tend to behave in retail environments. Most people kind of look at the eye level first, and then they'll go up and then they'll go down and we've done a lot of research just looking at how consumers look at products on shelves. And so if you're a marketer, right, and you know that a consumer is going to engage in selective information processing, where do you want your product positioned on the shelf? You want it right at eye level. And you want it to be a nice big display so that there's lots of them. It catches the eye and the consumer might pick that product up first. Because if they're doing selective information product processing, you don't have a lot of chances. You don't want to be the third or fourth product considered. That's the nature of advertising, right? Keep the product top of mind so that when a consumer is considering that you may get considered first. There's another heuristic related to that actually called the availability heuristic, which just means the easier you can recall something to mind, pull it out of your memory, the more likely it is that you'll consider that product, buy that product, think about that product. So that's the foundation of all advertising, right? We want to make sure our brand is top of mind and that consumers can easily pull it from their memory so that they'll think of us first and that we're the brand that's sort of the go-to brand. So that's one way we can apply these. Obviously, I gave you the example of price quality heuristic in wine, but we see it applied in lots of different categories. And so in general, marketers will use price to help consumers make inferences, especially when they know that the consumer doesn't have a lot of information about the product category. And so they'll use price as a signal to try to try to help a consumer make a decision. And then finally, you know, if we think about, I already gave some examples of scarcity, right? So there's a limited supply. This online offer will only last for the next 5 minutes. These products are going fast. It's interesting though, even sometimes in a normal shopping environment, without even trying, marketers will trigger the scarcity effect. And that is, have you ever been in a shopping center or a mall or looking in a retail environment? Watch the behavior of people, and you'll see someone go up to a sales rack and they'll start thumbing through the things on that sales rack. And if they get excited, they look really interested, like, wow, this is great. It won't take long. If anyone else sees them, suddenly you'll have another person right next to them looking at that rack like, oh, I don't want to miss out. Something might be taken away here. Somebody might get a better deal than I do. It's really interesting. People will gravitate toward what other people are excited about in the shopping environment. So those are all ways that you see these examples in the real world.
And those are great examples. So what has been some of the most surprising findings or insights that you've gained personally from your research?
Just how often we use things like selective information processing, consumer heuristics, and inferences in decisions, not just small, but also big and important. It really, as I really started to do more and more research in this area, I was really surprised how we'll often make really important decisions on using these cognitive shortcuts or these rules of thumb, or using very strange pieces of information, and doing processing really serially, right? In sort of this first come, first thing I consider, first thing I draw from my mind, it meets my minimum criteria, I'm going with it. I was really surprised at how often we make decisions that way, even when they're big, important decisions. And it's very easy to fall into using these cognitive shortcuts because many consumer psychologists believe that we use them as part of unconscious processing. So we almost use them implicitly. We don't do it very consciously. We sort of know these rules of thumb so well that we don't even have to think about them. So I was really surprised at how pervasive they are. I also realized that it doesn't take very much to get somebody to pop out of it. So what you can do is if you just tell someone, have you considered other alternatives? Have you slow down and think about this decision? Right. Or if you point out to them, you know, price isn't really that good of an indicator of quality of wine. Really, you should be looking at the year it was produced on the bottle. or really you should be looking at the vineyard. If you give people alternatives to break down their own rules, we can do that and we can make better decisions. So it's surprising to me how often we use them, but it's also surprising to me that we can overcome those tendencies, but it takes a lot of conscious effort to do so. And I still fall into the trap. So, yeah. And I don't want to necessarily imply to you that consider using selective information processing or heuristics or inferences are bad, because they do make our decision-making more efficient. But for some decisions, it may not be as effective. We may not get the best choice. It's just a trade-off.
Well, and then how has this research influenced your own perspective on consumer decision-making?
This is a question I get from my students a lot when I teach. Like, they're always like, are you a better consumer now doing all this research? And I have to say, I'm probably not a better consumer. I do the same thing. I know that price is not a good judgment of quality for lots of product categories. Of course, I still use it because I don't have any other information either. So I still use cognitive shortcuts. I still find myself kind of using the same heuristics and inferences that everyone else uses. But when the decision's important, I do try to remind myself, hey, wait a minute, what is the marketer trying to do here? And I do find myself sometimes analyzing that, and that will help me, I think, try to make a better decision. But it's really tough. It very much is ingrained in how we make decisions.
Well, and someone like yourself who's very busy doing all the research that, like you said, like an economist might think for rational decision making, it is time consuming. So you don't always have time to do that. So the shortcuts are
right.
More efficient. But as far as you talked about your students, what advice would you give to any students who want to research or work in the field of consumer research?
So if you really want to work in any field really related to consumer behavior, whether that is maybe you're interested in advertising, maybe you're interested in social media marketing, product development, or marketing research, you know, I think the two areas, if I was advising a student on what classes besides their regular business classes to take, make sure that you're taking a good statistics class, because you need to have those statistics skills as you're working in the field of marketing research, and take a good marketing research class, but then also a social psychology class. So as I said, I think of myself a little bit as a consumer psychologist, because I study these types of contexts and concepts. And so I studied a lot of social psychology when I was in school to help me become a better marketer and to help me become a better marketing researcher in consumer behavior. So I would say, obviously, all your regular business classes, but marketing research, for sure, a good statistics class, and doing a good social psychology class are things that I think would be really helpful.
Well, this has been a very educational discussion about consumer behavior. I have learned a lot today, as I'm sure our listeners have. So thank you so much for joining us and sharing your invaluable insights on this topic. If our listeners want to learn more about you, how can they connect with you? And then also, can you tell us how they can find your book, your newest edition for consumer behavior?
Sure, absolutely. So you can search for me on LinkedIn. So I have a LinkedIn page that you can connect with me on. Of course, anyone can send me an email through my university email address, which is perfectly fine and acceptable. And then in terms of getting the book, our publisher is Kendall Hunt. And so if you search you can go to the Kendall Hunt website, publisher website, and the book is available. If you just go to Amazon or Google it, you'll also get a link right back to the publisher. And so you can purchase the book that way.
And I will include all of those links in our show notes for the listeners so that you can just click right on them and go to the book and the publisher and all of that. So
fantastic. Great.
Thank you.
Good. I appreciate that.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Busy Research. You enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. We'll catch you in the next episode of Busy Research. Until then, stay curious and busy.